Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode in our countdown to possible coverage of The Penguin Show. We are looking at popular, or at least Batman comics that came out in the past couple of years. This one is Suicide Squad, Get Joker, exclamation point. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, are you bitter tonight?
I'm extremely bitter, Bob, because you have me reading a writer that I just never really cared for that much. You love this man. You adore this writer. I don't like him at one bit.
One of the best comics writers ever.
Who are we talking about, Bob?
Talking about Brian Azzarello. He and Alex Maleev did the 3-issue oversized miniseries for DC Black Label Suicide Squad Get Joker. And Matt, cards on the table. I think every Suicide Squad comic sucks, except for the original run that John Ostrander, Kim Yale, Luke McDonald did. That original 66-issue run from the late 80s, early 90s. That's a good run. And then I think this is a good comic. Every other Suicide Squad comic I've read has been pretty much garbage. Maybe not like all their guest appearances, but thing that's branded Suicide.
Yes, I did like the original run. I haven't read the entire thing, but I think I've read probably the first 20 issues that you've loaned to me at some point, or I've read them. I did enjoy that, Bob. But it's still, once again, it's this writer that's the problem. And some of you are thinking Brian Azzarello, you know, critically acclaimed, amazing. And I just never get his stuff, Bob. And I'm going to tell you where the first strike occurred. They decided to put Brian Azzarello's Broken City, which was a 6-issue run, immediately after Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee's Hush.
Yeah, and it really made Hush look crappy by comparison, didn't it?
No, it didn't, Bob. Hush was fun for me at the time.
You were very annoyed at the end of Hush. You were very annoyed at many parts of Hush. I know you don't hate Jim Lee's art like I'd hate Jim, but you were very bitter and very cranky at different points during that Hush run. And you know it's bad, and you knew it was bad then. What was that, 2003? You knew it was bad.
I knew it was bad, but I liked it up until we got to the middle of the series when Joker actually shoots Tommy Elliot or whatever. They have that whole murder scene. I liked up to that point. Everything after that sort of falls apart. And trying to shoe in Jason Todd, who, you know, we'll have a great discussion. He was in that. It was iconic for DC, okay? It was meant to be this big one-year thing where we're going to have these Batman, we're going to show the characters the way that we want them designed for the next couple of years, the way they want them to look to, like, just the regular media. Because that Jim Lee design, Bob, that stood the test of time for a long while. That was the Batman look.
Yeah, and it was terrible. It was terrible. It was awful. I'm really glad that eventually Greg Capullo did a slightly different, slightly more human, slightly more detailed version. Right. So, yeah, it was iconic, but it wasn't iconic in a good way. Remember how bad Huntress's costume was in Hush? Just ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, it was ridiculous. But it was the time, though, 2003, 2004.
I do think you make an interesting point that I hadn't considered, that you could say in some sense that Hush is responsible for this comic, Suicide Squad, Get Joker. Because Hush did the tease bring back Jason Todd, which led very quickly to the real bring back Jason Todd, which led us to this comic starring Jason Todd.
Bob, immediately after Hush, though, Azzarello comes out with Broken City. And Broken City is this hard-boiled detective story where he's searching for some guy named Angel Lupo, and Killer Croc's a pimp, and Batman is constantly grieving over his dead parents and seeing every single kid that dies, he thinks that's him. And he has to fix all of it.
I'm sorry, did you just describe every Batman story?
No, Bob, because there are Batman stories that aren't like that are really good. This one is just nonsense.
Batman is always about his parents. That's literally every Batman story.
Every freaking thing. Parents are dead. My parents are dead. He won't shut up about it. He's been crying in Broken City, Bob. He cries about not being able to save some kid.
You have to throw out Batman the Animated Series, too, if that's your standard of, oh, Batman can't angst over his parents. Essential to the character.
How many times did he angst over his parents in the Animated Series?
I would say quite often.
It was not as often as you think it was. I get that's his motivation, but we don't have to constantly go back to it. That's all Broken City was.
I'll admit I haven't read Broken City in probably about 10 years. Still think very fondly of it. Still remember some scenes of it very fondly. But I haven't read it in about 10 years. At some point in the future, maybe I will read Broken City and then we can argue about it. We're about to argue about Kit Joe.
I read it over the last couple of days, Bob, so it's still fresh in my mind a little bit, but... Yeah, I would love to talk to you about Broken City a little bit at some point, but once again, that was my introduction to Azzarello, because I didn't really know him till then. You lent me 100 Bullets after that, and then I've read The Joker, which I did not care much for.
Don't cap. You've read some of 100 Bullets. You haven't read all.
That is a huge difference. I've read about the first 20 issues of 100 Bullets somewhere in there. I can't remember. I just didn't get the next one.
You're right that Broken City did mark a tonal shift from Hush, but there's a larger point that the reason that Hush was an important comic, besides the fact that it sold, was before Hush, you didn't necessarily put your A talent on Batman and Superman. You put them on miniseries or you put them on characters you felt like needed a push. And then Hush created a bad, I think, trajectory where you started to put the top talent on the top characters. And you may say, well, Bob, that's top on top. What's wrong with that? But Batman and Superman and Spider-Man are going to sell regardless, right? But Hush did kind of really change the comics market back when we were young. And in a way, Broken City, even though the tone was very different, but the move from Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee, although both of whom I dislike and neither of whom I think should be considered top talent, but they are considered top talent. The move from them to Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso was, we're going to have another top talent team come on and do a very limited run and get a lot of hay out of it. So it's interesting in that sense. And I would say that even though you love Jim Lee and hate Brian Azzarello, I hate Jim Lee and love Brian Azzarello. Jim Lee actually loves Brian Azzarello, has contributed pinups to 100 Bullets, and joined Brian Azzarello to do a Superman run, which I will admit that Superman run from Azzarello and Jim Lee is one of the...
I'm never going to read that.
Matt, what would you feel about Superman fighting the Rapture?
I don't even want to think about that, Bob. I just know that the JMS run apparently is so bad that I tried to read the first one or two issues I gave up. I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Speaking of somebody who's read all of both, Azzarello Jim Lee run on Superman, not near as bad as the JMS run on Superman and Wonder Woman. Well, the Wonder Woman run is more just mediocre. The Superman run, my God, terrible. You know what the worst
thing is? Do you think that's because those characters aren't as dark as the Batman? The style Azzarello is used to?
Well, there is one Azzarello comic that I think you would like that we were going to review at one point called Dr. 13, but I think we get around to doing it. No. At some point, I still wouldn't mind making you read Dr. 13. You might hate it, but you might like it. And it is an example of Azzarello doing a lighter, kind of funner DC comic.
Oh.
And I think it's the only example, unless there's something I'm forgetting, which there might be.
But Bob, is there a strip club in it?
Not to my memory, but it's been about 10 years, so maybe I'm forgetting a strip club. But yes, there are often strip clubs.
Will someone get their teeth extracted?
Don't. So that's much more likely. I will say, I also don't remember if there's a strip club in the Brian Azzarello Jim Lee run, which I think was called For Tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
I don't think Superman went to a strip club in that, although honestly, it might have been a better comic if he had.
There you go. Well, Bob, we've talked all about Azzarello. Let's talk a little bit about the art here.
Yeah, so we've got Alex Maleev. He's a great artist. I like his stuff a lot, although I was looking back and he hasn't done a whole lot that I really, really love aside from this and his Daredevil run with Brian Bendis. He's done some other comics with Brian Bendis, but those are mostly not very good, although it's not really Maleev's fault. Bendis' Moon Knight is a really bad idea, and his espionage event, I think it was called Event Leviathan for DC a few years ago, Maleev did the art for that, but that wasn't very good.
His art, the Daredevil run with Bendis, is great. I read that. And then, but to describe his style, he has this intricate detailing and shadow work, all the pacing is cinematic. After you get past the introduction to Jason Todd and all that, you get seven panels. Most of the page will be seven panels of dialogue split up. And then when you get to the action, it usually changes it to four panels. You can see the progression. Doing that increases the pacing. The panel positioning is extremely important. You don't realize that until you really start getting into these and analyzing.
Maleev definitely is on the more realist rather than cartoony side of art.
Correct, yes. It looks a lot more realistic. And then there's also this very moody atmosphere he's able to create with the artwork. Everyone seems kind of depressed or angsty.
The colors go a long way to that, too. Matt Hollingsworth did the colors on this comic. Probably Hollingsworth did the colors on the Daredevil run, but I'm not sure.
Well, Bob, let's break into this issue so I can tear it apart.
You want to begin with holding this comic to a standard that no other comic the Bobbins achieves.
Bob, the first thing that drew my attention was on page 3. Azzarello automatically loses points for not visually distinguishing the Robins. That is a normal thing now. You have to distinguish the costumes of the Robins.
A, many comics don't do that. B, that's not on Azzarello. That's on the artist. Thematically, it makes sense for when you first see Jason Todd in this comic, for him to be presented as visually indistinguishable from old school Dick Grayson.
Right.
And then, him to be like the surly, different looking Red Hood later. It actually is thematically appropriate. So I reject your premise.
Well, I actually considered this, Bob, and I said maybe it's just the idea that in this issue, you just want Robin to be the same character. He just sees him as another soldier because Batman doesn't come into this at all. But yeah, he's just another child soldier for Batman.
Did it make you angry that Jason referred to Alfred as his mom, Matt?
I mean, I found it disrespectful, but it's the character. I mean, it just fits him. But when there were only three Robins in the 90s, I always thought that Todd was supposed to represent middle child syndrome.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Which explains why he would be like calling Alfred mom and being a clown.
On a certain level, it just is Alfred's role, right? Batman and Alfred do function as parents for the Robins, and Batman is more the patriarch, and Alfred is the one more who issues care and food.
You're gonna hate this, Bob, but I see it more as Bruce is the father and Alfred's like the nanny.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, a nanny is a mother for hire,
a substitute mom. Yes, Bob.
See, obviously, we're talking in broad stereotypes, and obviously, you could have a woman fill the patriarch role, and you could have a man fill the caregiver role. And
right.
So obviously real relationships shouldn't depend on such strict gender roles anyway. But I'm just saying, I don't even think it's like insulting. I just think it actually is just an assessment of the dynamics.
Yeah, you could see him as the mom. We need to find those like portraits they take of all the kids and stuff and see where Alfred falls in those portraits.
You did want to praise one thing early in the
conversation. All right, Bob, I will say this. I do love how they just completely glossed over how Jason was resurrected. Because it was so stupid that it was tied into Infinite Crisis and the Superboy Prime punching reality. And if you're listening to this and you're saying, what was he talking about? Yes, that is how Jason Todd was resurrected. Superboy Prime punched holes in reality.
One thing I really did like was on page 11 when you had the wall approaching Todd's cell to talk to Jason, and Jason mistakes her for the Batman, meaning that they have the wall and the Batman have the same presence, which I really do like.
That is neat, but I do have to just suspend my disbelief, Bob. Do you think Bruce would just let Jason rot in jail, rot in Belle Reve?
Yeah, absolutely, especially after he's been on a vigilante killing spree. Like, I read the Red Hood solo comics, Red Hood and the Outlaws, that stuff. But it would entirely not shock me if there's like an arc where Jason Todd's in Arkham or in Blackgate or whatever.
Well, Bob, are you a fan of the Skinny Waller?
I hate Skinny Waller, but you can't hold this against the comic. Like, DC makes them do this.
I like my Waller like a bulldog, and I want her sugar unregulated. I don't want her like coming at you.
Waller has been skinny for 13 years now. Ever since the New 52, she's been skinny. You can't hold that against
her. We also find out that Waller does know that Batman is Bruce Wayne. How do you feel about that?
I'm fine with it. I think that might be the case in the main universe. I do want to run down this first iteration of the Suicide Squad we get here.
Sure, Bob. So we get Firefly, who is a pyromaniac, and I kicked him Batman Arkham Origins. He's one of the go-to filler villains when they need fodder. I mean, he really is. And even in this comic, he's complete fodder, and I didn't even realize they replaced him. Silver Banshee, she's Irish, she screams, and she's a villain fodder for Superman. But man, we see her in everything. Anything Superman, she shows up in.
Although I will say, even though she's always from Irish mythology or Celtic mythology, in this comic, she actually speaks with a very pronounced
yes.
accent, which I don't think is they always bother to do with her.
Then we have a character named Pebbles, who is new to this comic. It's a Wolverine without the claws. Then we have Meow Meow. Yes, Meow Meow. She's also new. She has a tentacle mouth.
But she hides it with a COVID mask sometimes.
Yes, with a COVID mask, much like the character from...
Kitty face on it.
I'm trying to think, where have I seen this character before? Oh, yeah, her name is Melina in Mortal Kombat. That's right, okay. And then we have Plastique. Plastique was a Firestorm villain, and she explodes when she touches things. Or she explodes things when she touches them.
I'm not sure about this, but I think of the characters in this lineup, only Plastique and then the another one you're about to mention. I think those are the only two who have ever actually been on a Suicide Squad.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that Wild Dog would be next. That's Jack Wheeler. He's got like a hockey mask and a gun. He's supposed to be their sharpshooter. He debuted in his own miniseries in 1987.
When we used to collect comics from the late 80s, do you remember all the ads for the Wild Dog miniseries?
Yes, they were trying to push that guy so hard with the hockey mask. They were thinking the hockey mask was going to get the attention. Is it Casey Jones in DC? Is it Jason Voorhees in DC Comics?
I've read all the Wild Dog comics. That's not an accomplishment. It's a little bit Jason Voorhees does Die Hard. Do you know the writer-artist on that miniseries are?
No, who is it?
For Wild Dog? It's Max Allen Collins and Terry Beatty. Do you remember Max Allen Collins?
No, help me out, Bob.
He's the guy who, he didn't create Jason Todd, but he's the guy who created street tough Jason.
The guy that he takes the wheels off the Batmobile and all that crap. Not the acrobat murdered by Killer Croc or something.
Yeah, I think Jerry Conway, maybe it was somebody else, but I think it was Jerry Conway created Jason Todd, but his pre-crisis Jason Todd was just Dick Grayson 2.0.
Correct.
Then Collins also was writing the Dick Tracy comic strip at the same time he was writing Batman. He's the guy who took over from the original Dick Tracy guy in the 70s, Chester Gould. That's the same origin, I think, as Dick Tracy Jr. in the Dick Tracy comics. And then I don't know if you remember that movie Road to Perdition.
Oh, yes, I remember that. I've watched that a few times.
That's based on a comic by Max Collins and Richard Rayner, based on a graphic novel. So I actually like Max Collins a lot, and I actually like Wild Dog a lot. If I'm remembering correctly, Wild Dog is a washed-up college athlete who starts shooting a terrorist in a small Midwestern city with an Uzi. And I'm sorry, that guy totally would storm the Capitol on January 6th. Now, I know Max Collins and Terry Beatty are good boomer liberals, and they don't like that their character was the Capitol. But that's, I'm sorry, while their miniseries is good, this is also a very fair and valid interpretation of Wild Dog. I don't think Collins has remarked on this publicly, but it is funny. He didn't create Jason Todd, but in some sense, he is more responsible for creating this version of Jason Todd. And so it is funny that this comic hinges on to Max Collins' character.
That is interesting. But the X-Character, Bob, we got another one here that's brand new to this series. It's brand new to DC. Yonder Man, who sounded very established at first. I was like, okay, this has got to be some random 60s guy. No, he's a teleporter.
Do you like that pun? I like the pun of his name.
I really do, yeah. That's why I thought it was a real thing. I was like, oh, that sounds actually creative. Because Meow Meow and Pebbles is not that great.
A Yonder Man feels like he'd be like a 1970s Hawkman.
We also have Harley Quinn, Bob. Harley Quinn's got to be on every Suicide Squad team now.
Which is interesting, because, I mean, she definitely, she didn't exist for most of the time the original Suicide Squad existed. So, yeah, she was never on the original, which, I mean, shouldn't be a reason a character's not on the thing. But it's just interesting that she's so tightly identified with the franchise now.
I just love how they've taken her from being Joker's girlfriend to just her own thing in Suicide Squad. She shifted completely. Reminds me of the shifts they've done with other characters like Oracle. The Batgirl. That's our Suicide Squad here, Bob.
Oh, you forgot the last one, Matt. Not Jason Todd.
Who did I leave out?
He joins later.
Who?
He's creepy. He's short. He's fat.
Oh, Toyman. Yes, Toyman.
I just figured we'd throw him in here.
On page 22, Bob, I was very confused by what this black label is able to get away with, because Banshee says fackin', yet they use symbols to represent dirty words on the previous pages. This goes completely out the door as the comic continues, because then they just start using F-bombs all over the place. Was this purposeful?
Don't think it's purposeful. I just think it's something that, you know, an editor should have caught that they didn't catch. Could you actually say fackin'? In a normal DC comic, is the Irish accent thick enough that can get through the censors? Well, it's an interesting question.
That's what I thought at first, Bob. But then we see the F word used all the time with Wild Dog.
Our dynamic here, me and you, it's rather like I'm taking the hard line against you that Pebble takes against Wild Dog and Toyman, which I appreciate.
He's not wrong, though. Toyman has got, like, increasingly more evil as they turn him into, like, the Simpsons comic book guy. He's creepy.
So, on to creepier yet much less creepy at the same time, does Meow Meow's power, does that give you flashbacks to the comic we read last week, City of Madness?
I'm not sure if it should be, like, Cthulhu Meow should be considered a disease or, like, an evolutionary adaptation.
For a world that's undergoing global warming, maybe it is.
Yeah, it may be really nice. It'd be, I mean, she's catching flies. She can eat anything she wants. I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah. So, Matt, how do you feel about the Joker working for the Russians in this comic?
I'm okay with it. It just makes sense. I mean, whatever. Joker's crazy. Joker will do anything. I mean, it doesn't matter. You can just go with it. That's what I like about the character. It's one day he's doing that one. Think about the Jason Todd story, Bob, Death in the Family. What was going on with Joker at that time?
Joker was a sitter from Iran.
So, this is not that far-fetched.
Which I also just want to say that although I don't love the form of governments in the Islamic Republic of Iran, I would say it's far more likely that the Joker would work for the U.S. than Iran. Based on current events in the Middle East, the U.S. much more takes Joker policy than Iran takes. How did you feel about Joker going Clockwork Orange on the wall?
Okay, Bob, this was a very powerful couple of pages. One thing that Azzarello does in his comics is he really pushes boundaries with Joker's sexuality. Anytime I see the Droog costume, which is what he's wearing here from Clockwork Orange, my brain goes straight to the home invasion scene from Kubrick's film because it was so disturbing. And I hate it. When you associate that with Joker, you're like, oh, that word is... And I didn't know this, Bob, but Droog is actually Russian.
No, I didn't know it. It's a Russian term.
Which now makes sense because it's, yeah. Azzarello gets points for using a Milli Vanilli song, though, to replace Singing in the Rain. In the movie, the character doing Singing in the Rain, but here he does Blame It on the Rain by Milli Vanilli. This is where Azzarello gets credit. That is hilarious. I want to see that in live action. Him beating somebody with a crowbar, singing Blame It on the Rain. Azzarello trying to get in your head so you won't forget his stupid book.
He does it in this, too, really disturbing way, where Joker forces Harley to do a striptease in the club, but the dynamics and the coercion in that scene are, like, really messed up.
Well, it was also meant to be more like the True Lies scene. Do you remember the movie True Lies, Bob?
I don't watch Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, anyway, there's a scene where, like, there's a whole strip scene, and it basically plays out the same way in issue 2 here, but we'll talk about that later.
Again, when it's relevant, I'm...
There is a scene in Joker, Bob.
Did you expect the wall to die first?
Bob, I really didn't think any of them died, and it confused me when we have a second Firefly show up later on.
They explicitly say in the dialogue, it's
the sun. I got it, but at first when I look at it, it just confused me. Death doesn't last, and since it's an Elseworld story, you just don't care. It shouldn't be that way, but it is.
Then why should we read any of it?
Well, why do you have to kill characters in the Elseworlds?
Because it's a disturbing scene of saying Joker beat the wall senseless.
The same way he did Jason Todd. Kind of the way he shot Tommy Elliot.
Well, I support him with that. If I'd been there, I'd have shot Tommy Elliot. But what's your favorite art from the first issue?
Right, my favorite art is on page 18, Bob, and it's just that introduction to all the different members of the Suicide Squad. I love the way he has a panel for each cell. I just think that's cool. And that's nothing, it's not original. I know that's been done before, but I love it when they do that.
Yeah, it's a nice layout. I think my favorite, I'm pretty sure somebody else has done this too, but like you say, it's a nice layout choice. On page 38, a gun battle between the squad and the Joker's Russians. But for the panels, they actually use the sound effect of the gun, and then they just draw the characters in the letters. I thought that was clever. What was your favorite dialogue in issue 1, Matt?
Toy Man, when he says, "Would you like to see some weapons?" And Wild Dog says, "I got one right here for you, purr." Putting Toy Man in his place.
I think my favorite would also be a Wild Dog line on page 23, where Wild Dog says, "I took a shit on Nancy Pelosi's desk."
The creators of Wild Dog are no longer happy with how they're using Wild Dog at DC.
I'm sorry, that's the character they created. It's like that guy saying that he didn't mean for Wolverine to be understood as dedicating his life to Jesus Christ. Maybe he didn't think he was writing that scene, but that was the scene he was writing. Okay, maybe Collins and Beatty didn't think they were creating a character who would storm the Capitol on January 6th, but they were creating a character who would storm the Capitol on January 6th.
Any listeners who are wondering what Bob's referring to, that is the episode Nightcrawler, and you can find that coverage on our Patreon at Uncanny Tricks. Check it out.
Yeah. You see Wolverine become a born-again Christian in the 90s. It's all right, Matt. So you also want to begin issue number 2 with a gripe.
Yes, Bob. Will you please, to God, explain to me what is happening at the beginning of this issue? Is Joker this is my interpretation. Is Joker recording himself shooting the water with a machine gun? Is that what's going on? They're watching it on a cell phone.
He's Skyping to them. And then he's blackmailing them to also attack the sea. It's an uncommon trope of madness to have a mad character wrestle with the sea or attack the sea. Cuchulainn in Irish mythology. It's a demonstration of Joker's power over the squad that he's giving them an absurd task to do.
All those characters go out and start beating up the ocean after they meet up with Toy Man and blow up his robot dog.
Especially the first half of this issue is a hangout issue. And I'm sure Matt's going to complain about it, but I think they do a good job of Harley explaining that it's part of the Joker's mind game, that he has control of the Suicide Squad because he beat the crap out of Waller at the end of issue 1. He now has the boombox that can control the bombs that are implanted in all the squad.
Wait a minute. Okay, Bob, that just hit me. I get it now. They were just complying.
Yes, that's what I said.
This is the problem I have with Azzarello. He has too many fucking gaps. I'm sorry. He has too many gaps, Bob. Too many. He has to explain a little more to me. I need my hand held when I'm reading these Azzarello comics.
I think it's good for you to have to swim alone.
The reason they were attacking the sea is because he was going to blow their heads off if they didn't. But you're not completely crazy.
This will make you hate it, but it's also foreshadowing for the end of the comic.
Yes, it is. I get that. I get on the beach. All right.
So we're having a hangout comic. One thing that does come up in the Hangout comic. So Matt, Yonder Man tells Jason Todd that he needs weed to activate his powers. And then Pebble tells Jason Todd that weed doesn't affect him. And Plastique tells Jason Todd that she just likes the smell. Did you buy any of that?
No, they're all just getting high and lying to Jason Todd, who seems to care way too much about it.
I do also really love when they're talking to the Russian henchman, but Wild Dog calls the Joker a green-haired monkey dick. And he's like, oh no, did I say that?
So that's my favorite bit of dialogue from this issue, Bob, when he says he can take a joke right after he says that.
I think we both had great therapeutic effect from Plastique blowing up a smartphone.
I really appreciated the art here, though, because the Plastique is just so nonchalant. And she sticks her hand in, reaching through the fence to touch the tip of the very tip of the phone. It was very well drawn. I have to say that. Nonchalant. Just going to blow your phone up. Bob, on page 37, you ready? Here's where we get a strip club, Bob. Bob, I just want you to know there's a strip club because it's Brian Azzarello, and Brian Azzarello likes to put strip clubs in his comics.
Well, in fairness, Brian Azzarello writes comics about people who would go to strip clubs a lot. They're gangsters. They're criminals. They go to strip clubs a lot.
The Suicide Squad goes to strip clubs in their full costumes, Bob. Is that what you're telling me?
Because they're fighting the Russian mob, and the Russian mob owns a lot of strip clubs, Matt.
They always have to go and watch the shows.
Because they're under the...
Matt. Bob's just going to blame the whole strip club thing on the Joker wanting to go to the strip club.
I did want to raise a philosophical question, Matt.
Right ahead.
Toyman gets the boombox at the end of this issue. Would you be more afraid of Toyman having the boombox and can blow up your head, or the Joker having your boombox and can blow up your head?
Joker's more erratic, Bob, so I would be more afraid of him. What has he done so far, though, to him? He's made him go fight the ocean and go to a strip club.
And been pretty coercive towards Harley.
Very coercive towards Harley, yes. But Toyman, I could probably just talk to him about toys, and we get along fine.
But then he's going to stab you for no reason, too. I find Toyman honestly creepier than the Joker.
Okay.
On a certain level.
A Superman villain more creepier than a Batman villain.
I would go where Harley cuts Joker's throat with a razor. In her teeth, no.
My favorite art, Bob, was on page 20. It's when Yonder Man and Pebbles are playing basketball, because you think that would be really stupid, but having a teleporter play basketball with Weapon X, the way he keeps moving around each different spot of the court. I told you my favorite dialogue.
Yeah, you did.
What about you, Bob?
I'll do two choices. I like Wild Dog on page 12 saying Bruce Wayne's the only billionaire that tells it like it is. And so I like the idea that in the DC universe, Bruce Wayne is cringy like Elon Musk, and Wild Dog likes Elon Musk, a.k.a. Bruce Wayne. That cracks me up.
Yeah.
And then I really did like, in a very sexualized way, Joker telling Jason Todd on page 32, no joke, it is killing me not to kill you again.
That's a pretty slick line.
It's also one of those lines you could actually only say in a comic where resurrection is a thing.
You're not going to say that anywhere else.
For number three, Matt, do you want to run down the new Suicide Squad or the real Suicide Squad?
Two blood sports, you got Deadshot, Deathstroke, and then Firefly Jr., and then Peacemaker and Rick Flag.
I do like that this team are basically just portrayed as a death squad. They're just walking through the issue, mowing down children, and they don't talk. And I think it is a funny joke about how most of these characters, I would maybe give Deadshot a little bit of credit here, but most of these characters just aren't characters at all. They're just dudes with guns. I appreciated the way Azarelli used them. This is basically the silent death squad through the whole issue.
But Bob, what about Peacemaker?
Peacemaker is not a character. He stacked together six characters who are all functionally the same character. It's just a guy with a gun and a mask. And then, you know, we'll say Firefly Jr. is a different character because he is a flamethrower. So that's different than a gun.
Yeah.
So Matt, we've got a rundown of the casualties. Thought the wall was dead, but that was a fake out. She's just in a coma. Firefly Sr. Then Toyman kills Yonder Man at the end of issue two. Then Silver Banshee gets got. Then Plastique gets got, although she goes out like a champ.
She sacrifices herself.
Then we have Pebbles Birdfinger. Then we have Pebbles. Were you surprised that our survivors are just Red Hood, Harley Quinn, Meow Meow, and Wild Dog?
Out of all the characters I thought that would have died, I figured Meow Meow wasn't going to make it.
How do you feel about they tease a Red Hood, Harley Quinn romance throughout this comic? On the one hand, I don't necessarily need that, but I do like that they both seem to have like a shared understanding about the Joker.
They both suffer trauma at the hands of the Joker. Thanks, Brian Azzarello.
Matt, I bet you're furious about the end.
Yes, Bob, and this is where this gets us low. This is what kills this. And I don't know what the intended ending should have been, but this is almost as bad as Gotham Knights issue number 74, Bob. And I'm going to go into detail about what that happened there.
I strongly disagree with that.
The cover had Hush and Joker going at it, with the words, "It all ends here." And then this is the final issue of the series of Gotham Knights, not to be confused with the video game of the same name. You get to the end of the issue, and it just leaves you with a cliffhanger.
Is there a game named Gotham Knights, or is it just the TV series?
There's a game, yeah. Gotham Knights. It was the one where you don't actually play as Batman. You play as either Batgirl, Jason Todd, Tim Drake, or...
Sorry.
I left somebody out there. Bad. Glad I can inform you on the things I know about. But it ends here, Bob, with Joker, Hush, and Batman on a rooftop, and it's never concluded or finished. It was actually a pretty good build-up. And it was about this guy named Joseph Lieberman.
You cannot do this revisionist history. We thought it was a terrible topic at the time. No, it was not a game.
I'm going to reread it. I'll update my opinion. But I collected those pretty religiously, though, and I don't remember them being that bad. Some were good. Some of those Gotham Knights issues were pretty good, especially the standalone stories. But when they decided to do these arcs, it wasn't that great.
We're going to have to do an episode on Hush Returns now, too, if you're going to do the... shameful. Correct me if I'm wrong, but basically the Joker in effect tells Red Hood that they're coming for him anyway and that he might as well kill himself. The camera shifts higher up the beach where the survivors are and where the Death Squad, Suicide Squad is approaching. We hear a gunshot over the ocean, from which could mean that Joker, since he was concealing a gun, although he didn't have it as readily available as Jason Todd's gun, it could mean the Joker killed Jason Todd, it could mean Jason Todd killed the Joker, or it could mean that one of them killed themselves.
In the final three panels, Harley has a tear in her eye, so we don't know if she's crying because she's scared, or if she's crying because Joker's dead, or if she's crying because Jason's dead.
Yeah, and we also don't know if she knows the distance between Harley and where Jason Todd and the Joker are isn't super clear.
Just so you know, guys, Harley is dressed in her underwear because after this, after the strip club scene, they just never put her clothes back on.
Oh, yeah, because Harley's never dressed in her underwear. We should just hold that against this. Not every other comic book case.
So, Bob, I don't want this to be open to my interpretation because I really like my comics to have a solid ending or a finish. That isn't so just open to interpretation. Not my favorite.
Well, I think the difference is, A, it's a comic that's called Suicide Squad. B, it's a comic that's set up this theme of like madness and futility of the Joker forcing them at the beginning of issue 2 to fire into the ocean. And C, it's not exactly an Elseworlds, but it's sort of an Elseworlds, right? There's not necessarily going to be a continuation of this. And so I think the ambiguous ending is actually very interesting and works very well. Whereas I think the reason that the ambiguous ending of Hush Returns sucks so much is that the story is going to continue. And at some point, Hush is going to return again. And at some point, you're going to have to explain what happened. Whereas this never has to be explained, whereas the Hush comic does. So I think that's one of the major differences. Does that make sense?
Gotcha. So there's no repercussions.
The first issue also starts on the notion that not immutable
in
this universe, even if Jason Todd and the Joker both are killed, although probably not both are killed, it's only one gunshot. But even if everybody is killed, like, death is not the end in DC comic universe. This is in no way as good as Twin Peaks The Return. How can you sit here telling me you need, and then you think Twin Peaks The Return is one of the greatest things ever?
Because it's a different, Bob, I expect that from Twin Peaks. My Batman and Suicide Squad, I don't expect that. I want closure. I want an ending. What's your favorite arc, Bob?
I really like a Joker having a fatherly smile as Red Hood tortures Firefly Jr.
Lots of good torture there. Bob, my favorite is pages 5 through 6 of this last issue, the progression of panels where everyone's getting shot. It's just like rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat-a type stuff, but your brain makes the action move to the right as you go down the page. I really like the art in this. I've been impressed with the art. I would like to see more from this guy. He did one of the stories in Detective 1000, which I'm trying to remember which one it was.
I actually think I read Detective 1000. My favorite dialogue is when Plastique tells Red Hood to throw her at them, meaning your enemies. I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah, my favorite bit of dialogue, Bob, was on page 11, where Joker says, "You've been in these types of situations before, right? Hopeless? I should know. I put you in them. So what is it you do?" And he's talking to Red Hood, to Jason Todd.
Who's your favorite character?
Got to be Wild Dog for the humor, Bob.
Yeah, I'll go with Wild Dog, too. He stormed the Capitol. That's hilarious. So, Matt, right now, we've got a four-item list. Those four items are Fantastic Four by Hickman, Doom by Sanford Green and John Hickman, 3, Batman City of Madness by Christian Ward, and 4, Werewolf by Night by Derek Landry and Fran Gehlen. I would argue, even though I like this a lot and I want to say it should go number 1 just to trigger you,
yeah, you're insane.
I would argue it should go number 4 below Batman City of Madness and above Werewolf by Night. Where would you say it should go?
I'd put it at the very bottom, Bob, but I know we read Werewolf by Night. I didn't think it didn't stick with me as well, so I'm okay with you putting it where you have it, because I even thought that same thing too. But I would probably put it at the bottom. There'll be worse stuff, though. If we do put it at the bottom, there will be worse things, I know. This is not the worst comic I've ever read, but you making me read Brian Azzarello, I knew what I was going into.
I'd say, too, even if you don't like Azzarello, I feel like Maliv's art should count for something. I think that Werewolf by Night comic is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But I do think that Maliv's art is better in this than Galen's art is in the Werewolf by Night.
So let's put it at, I like that, number 4. Because of the art for Matt.
Because of the art for Matt. All right. So that's been our episode on Get Joker. We'll probably be back next week with another Batman-themed episode as we get geared up for the Penguin and Joker and Harley Quinn. I am Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everyone.
Thanks for listening.